Shklal Yashav Erev Yasa. All right, we'll say good morning. Today's daf is Kuf Yud Gimel. We have a lot to do today, Baruch Hashem. Our shir this morning is dedicated by Bruce and Kathy Posner in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Kathy's grandfather, Meir Greenbaum, Meir Ben Naftali, Zichron Lebrach. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an aliyah and the family in Nechama. And we'll say with that, let's begin. We're picking up page daf Kuf Yud Gimel 113. We are picking up four lines down from the top. Meisve. Daktar, so let's remember again, if you remember, we were discussing yesterday the interesting idea about salting a piece of fish together with a piece, in the Bryce's case, it was fowl, it was chicken. And the idea being over here, highlighting or reinforcing the principle that when something is expelling, it cannot absorb. Right, when it's being polite, it cannot be bolea. So therefore, the issue that came up is that when you're salting the fish together with the fowl, the issue is that the fish finishes emitting its blood and its juices faster than the fowl. As a result, while the fowl is still emitting, the fish begins to absorb. So we said, then the Gemara introduced the idea that the tzir, there's a different problem with the fish, which is that halacha lemaisa, again, it emits not only blood, but it emits tzir as well. So the Gemara's meisvei, dag tarshim malchim dag tameh, if you salt a kosher fish together with a non-kosher fish, mutter. The halacha is that ultimately, again, the kosher fish is mutter. So the Gemara says, my love, shahayu shnei meluchin. Are we not talking about a case where both were salted? Rashi says, my love shnei meluchin. Ushma mina tzir nami lo mivla kolzman sh'oskim aplita. Now, let's remember again, so we were discussing the idea that there is blood and ultimately, again, these tzir, which literally means brine or juices. The fact that you could salt a kosher fish together with a non-kosher fish, and the kosher fish is going to be okay, Bosa, indicates to us that there's clearly not even a release of tzir, right? There's not even a release of some kind of fish juice to be absorbed into the other, which contradicts what we said before, to which the Gemara says, "Ay lo kigon shayatar maliach v'tamei tafal." No, that's not the case. In fact, the case is where the kosher fish was salted, and the non-kosher fish was not. And therefore, we'll say in that particular case, the kosher fish is going to be emitting, it's going to be polite because of the salt, and because it's actively being polite, therefore what? It does not have the ability to absorb anything from the non-kosher fish. Ay, v'hamin diktani seifa. But yet, look at the end of the seifa of that braisa. Avalim haya tahar maliach. But at the end of the braisa said that what Rabbi say, that if the kosher fish was salted and the non-kosher one was not, there would seem to indicate to us that halacha lemaisa, the first part of the braisa is talking about a situation where both fish were salted, to which the Gemara says, Perushe kamefarish. In reality, the braisa Rabbi say, is comprised of two parts, one part expounding upon the other. Here's how you read it. If you go ahead and you have a kosher piece of kosher fish and piece of non-kosher fish, and the kosher fish is salted and the non-kosher fish is not, the halacha is the kosher fish is mutter. The kosher fish is salted together with the non-kosher fish. The kosher fish is mutter. When is the kosher fish mutter? Kezod. Shetar maliach v'tamei tafel. That would be a case, ultimately, where the kosher fish was salted and the non-kosher one was not. And therefore, we'll say the logic being, when the fish is salted, it expels. So therefore, again, in this case over here, the kosher fish is salted, which means it's expelling. The non-kosher fish is not salted, which means it's not expelling, which is good news for us. Why? Because if the kosher fish is not expelling anything, it means there's nothing for the kosher fish to absorb. So the Gemara says, Hachanami mistabra, this seems to be a clear interpretation. Because if you think that the Reisha is talking about where both of them are salted, Hashta shnei maluchim shari. If you're going to tell me in a case where both of them are salty and tell me that they're both, that the kosher fish is mutter, tahar maliach v'tamei tafel miboy, then I will say it goes without saying in a case where the kosher fish is salted and the non-kosher fish is not, then certainly the kosher fish will remain mutter. To which the Gemara says, well, that's not a good raya. Imushum ha, lo iria. If it was because of that, that would not necessarily be the correct interpretation. I'll tell you why. Tana seifa legaloye reisha. Because we'll see, you could taino that the Braisa wrote the Seifa to shed light on the Reisha. Delo tema Reisha tahar maliach v'tamei tafel. Don't say that the Reisha is talking about a case where ultimately, again, the kosher fish is salted and the non-kosher fish is not. Aval shnei meluchim aser, but perhaps if both are salted, ein achinami, then the kosher fish would be aser. Tana seifa, therefore again I will say the end of the brisa says, tar maliach v'tamei tafel, that ultimately again if the kosher fish is salted, the non-kosher fish is not michlal, the reisha shnei meluchim. Therefore we could infer from that the reisha is talking about a situation where both are salted, and nevertheless, it would be mutter. Okay, so we'll say, so remember, all that's happening over here is the application of the same principle we've been dealing with over the last couple of days, which is that when something is actively busy or occupied, you know, expelling, it cannot absorb. So therefore, we'll say, in these kind of cases where you have a kosher fish and a non-kosher fish together in the same pot, so again, halacha l'maisa, if the kosher fish is salted and the non-kosher fish is not, it's okay. Obviously, the chatchila, you should not do this. We'll discuss that. But if you did it, because the kosher fish is salted, it's busy expelling. Because it's busy expelling, it cannot absorb anything, neither blood nor tzir from the non-kosher fish. So tashma miseifa. Supposedly, let's look at the end of the brisa. So the Gemara says, tashma miseifa. This here, supposedly, we're on Kof Yud Gimel Amud Aleph 113, right across from Tosas Ein Machzikin Dam. Tashma miseifa. The seifa. Let's have a look at the end, the last part of the seifa. Avalim Haya Tamim Aliach V'Tar Tafel Aser. Supposedly, what are the brisa saying? That if the non-kosher fish was salted and the kosher fish was not, the kosher fish would be aser. Tami maldiach v'tar tafel hu da'aser. I could infer from there that ultimately, again, it's only in a situation where the non-kosher fish is salted and the kosher fish is not, that it's aser. Hashnehen maluch and shari. But it sounds like if both were salted, ultimately the kosher fish should be fine. To which Gemara says, no, that is an incorrect inference. I did the Tana Reisha Tar Maliach Betamei Tafel. Since in the beginning of the Braisa we wrote that if the kosher fish is salted and the non-kosher fish is not, Tana Nami Seifa Tamei Maliach Betar Tafel. So therefore, Abbasi, we maintain Mishnaic symmetry. I should say Braisa symmetry. Amar Shmuel. Okay, so we'll say, so first of all, it happens to be that the Shulchan Aruch happens to quote these halachas. So we'll say this is brought down in Hilchos Melicha, Simin Ayin Sif Aleph. So the Shulchan Aruch discusses over here that you are actually permitted to salt multiple pieces of meat together. In a regular case, multiple pieces of meat together. And we'll say, now what's the Havamina that you shouldn't be able to salt multiple pieces of meat together? Everything is expelling blood. So isn't there a concern that ultimately, again, you're going to have one piece sitting in the blood of another piece of meat? And I will say, the truth is, if you take it to logical extension, forget about one piece of meat and another piece, it's still a bigger, it's a simpler issue, which is what? A piece of meat, I will say, what? Sitting in its own blood, it's problematic also, right? So the Shulchan Aruch says, we don't worry about that. Why? This principle. As long as the meat is salted, we understand that it is busy expelling the blood. And while it's busy expelling the blood, ultimately, again, it does not absorb. Which is why, by the way, then we'll discuss this in part of the process of salting. What kind of kli, what type of utensil do you have to use? A perforated one. Because we do not want the meat sitting in the blood. As much as when the salt is acting on the meat does not absorb. We don't want the meat sitting in blood, because after a certain amount of time, there could be an issue, ultimately, of reabsorption. So Shulchan Aruch has all of these different cases, and he happens to quote, Aval basar in dogim, but salting fish and meat together, afilu basar ofos in dogim, asr limloch, the fisha dogim poltim kot siran kodim shiflota ofes demos. This is actually very interesting. So there's an issue over here, really just right as the Gemara says, that because the fowl and the meat, or the fish and the meat, emit their blood at different paces, at different times. Halacha l'maisa, if you were to go ahead and salt them together, the fish would become aser. Actually, the Shulchan Aruch paskin that you'd have to remove a klipa. So obviously the ideal is that you're not salting them together. Okay, says the Gemara Baiter. Oh, I thought you were saying to me. I'm done. 2 minutes. Okay, good. Two-minute warning. I'll say good. Thank you. So the Gemara goes weiter. We'll say, let's go. So the Gemara says, Itmar. Amr Shmuel. Eina basa yotze midei damo ela imkin mocho yafe yafe. So we'll say, very important halacha. So basar, the meat, does not expel its blood, unless of course it was salted very well. So we'll say the halacha is that the meat has to be heavily salted, we'll discuss, in order to properly expel its blood. Umadicho yafa yafa. And after you finish salting it, you really have to wash it off very well as well, right? You have to wash it off to make sure that you remove the salt. Now, the reason for that we're going to see is because the salt itself absorbs blood. So because the salt absorbs blood, you want to wash off the salt as well. Umadicho yafa yafa, so the Gemara says, fine. Itmar Rafuna Amar Moleach Umadiach. So Rafuna says you have to salt the meat and wash it. B'masni Satana, in the Braisa we learned, Madiach Umoleach Umadiach. You have to wash the meat, you have to salt the meat, and you have to wash the meat again. So we'll say this is the machlokas. First opinion saying you have to salt it and wash it. Second opinion saying you have to wash it, salt it, and wash it. V'lo pligi, the truth is they're not arguing. Ha dechalalei beit habcha. Everything depends on what happens before you purchase the meat. Sometimes the butcher would wash down the meat. If the butcher washed down the meat, then that first act of washing is satisfactorily taken care of by the butcher. Therefore, when you bring it home, all you need to do is salt it and subsequently wash it. But if the butcher did not go ahead and wash off the meat, then halacha lemaaseh, you have to wash it, salt it, wash it. Rav Diminar Damalach Lebemilcha Galal Nisa. So this is actually very interesting. So Rav Dimi of Narda used to salt his meat with this salt of Gal Nisa. Rashi says Melach Gasa, large salt. I guess this is what they would call today kosher salt, right? He would go ahead and he would salt his meat with kosher salt. Uman Fitzle, and after that he would shake it off. Now we'll say, now the advantage of using the kosher salt as opposed to smaller salt is because the granules are larger, you could literally just shake it off the meat. It doesn't necessarily require, so remember again, the point of the hadacha, the point of the rinsing, is to remove the salt from the meat, because under the assumption that blood gets absorbed into the salt. If you use larger grain salt, you could just simply shake it off. Amar Misharshia. Rav Misharshia says that there are certain internal organs that you don't have to assume that there is blood in there. So the Gemara says, which internal organs are we talking about? Akar kasha, the rectum of the animal. Maya, the stomach, although again we're going to see which stomachs it applies to. Vahadra de kinsa, and the large intestine. Okay, so we'll say, so the idea, so what's the practical idea of this? That halacha lemaaseh, if you were to eat any of these parts of the animal, it wouldn't necessarily require a previous salting. Amar Shmuel, in manichin basar maliach ela agabe kli menukov. So we saw this before. Therefore, when salting the meat, you have to put it in a perforated utensil. Remember again, we want the blood to run off. Rav Sheshes, malach le garma garma. So the Gemara says, Rav Sheshes would go ahead and salt one piece of meat at a time. In other words, he would not salt multiple pieces of meat together. I will say, why not? Trey my time alo, mishum deparish mehai ubalahai. I will say, because apparently Rav Sheshes was concerned that what's going to happen, what's emitted from one will be absorbed by the other. Therefore, he only salted the meat one at a time. Aye, says the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Chad nami parish mehai gisa balahai gisa. So if that's the case, if you're concerned about reabsorption, and I will say the truth is that concern applies to what? Even to one piece of meat by itself. Literally translated, it means that when it expels blood from one side, it'll be reabsorbed by the other. Ela loshna. Rather, again, halach lemaisebo, as we just saw before, it is mutter to salt even multiple pieces of meat together, and there is no concern that halacha lemaisa, they're going to reabsorb from each other. Why not? Again, it's actually one of these beautiful sugyas. We're operating just off one basic, simple principle, which is when the item is busy expelling, it will not absorb. So halacha lemaisa, again, if at the end of the day, the salt is there, it's expelling the blood, it's not going to absorb. It's not going to absorb from itself. It's not going to absorb from another piece of meat. Amar Shmuel, we'll say first wide line, Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Interesting Gemara. Amar Shmuel, Mishun Rabbi Chiya, Hashover Mafrakta Shal Behema, if one breaks the neck of an animal, Kodim Shetetze Nafsha. Before ultimately, again, the animal dies. So you break the neck before the animal dies. Hareze Machbid Es Habasar V'Gozel Es Habrios. But we'll say ultimately, again, this is causing the meat to become heavy, and you're stealing from people. You're stealing from people. Umavli dam ba'ivarim. And ultimately, again, you're causing blood to be absorbed in the limbs. Now, we'll say, now what's happening over here? Look at Rashi for just a moment. It's actually quite interesting. Harizim machbid es habasar. So now what we're saying is, it's considered as if we're causing the limbs, the meat, to become heavier, because there is a more intense blood absorption in the meat. And therefore, I will say, as a result, I'm stealing from people. How am I stealing from people? Because when someone wants to go ahead and buy a pound of meat, they're looking to buy a pound of meat. The problem is, in this particular situation, because there is a more intense blood absorption, therefore, again, much of that volume is made up of blood and not of meat. What's happening over here? Look at Rashi. Hareza machbedas habasar. Lefisha b'shash shchita sa hi truda lahotzidam. Because we'll say at the time of shchita, so if you ever see, right, shchita videos, right, there's some free time on your hands. Right, so we'll say, so that blood comes out strong. Right, there is a gush of blood that comes out. So listen to this. So the Gemara says, ukishishora mafrakta mitoch tzarasa. So it's actually interesting that she says part of that is because with the shechita, there's like an inner groan of the animal that almost pushes additional blood out. The problem is that when the neck is broken, the animal is compromised, and as a result, again, doesn't have that inner koach to expel the blood. And therefore, what says the result of the lack of inner strength of the animal, not like in like inner emotional strength. I mean, like you know, just strength of the animal because it's already been physically compromised. Therefore, the blood does not leave the animal as easily. Because of that, where does that blood go? It remains absorbed in the meat of the animal. And therefore, says Rashi, "Umachbed abasar v'nimtza gozel ashabrios kishu mochra v'mishkal v'adam shokel." Therefore, it turns out that you're effectively stealing from people. You're cheating people when you sell the meat at a certain weight. But in fact, again, it's not that volume of meat. Much of it ultimately, again, or some of it, is still going to be blood. So the Gemara says, Ibailu. So the Gemara asks a shayla. So, Ibailu. Hechi kamar machbed es habasar v'gozel es habrios. Mishum de mavli adam be'ivarim. Hale didei shapir. Odilma le didei nami asa. So the Gemara therefore asks a question. When we say that the blood gets absorbed into the meat, so I will say, so what does that mean practically? Does that mean that there's just an issue over here, there's a business issue about cheating people? I'm selling 10 pounds of meat, but in fact it's not 10 pounds of meat, it's 8 pounds of meat and 2 pounds of blood. But again, for myself, I could eat that. There's no problem for me to eat it. There's just there's a chosh mishpat issue that I have to work out. Or is it saying that, no, I can't eat it either? Why? Because this type of situation leaves off with an animal with the meat saturated with so much blood that it is impossible to properly remove all of that blood from the animal. So this is not only a choshen mishpat issue in terms of a sale, but this is a kashrus issue vis-a-vis myself as well, to which the Gemara says, teku. We're not sure. The Arnav is going to have to answer that for us. Is this just a commerce issue, or is this a kashrus issue as well? That remains to be seen. So the Gemara goes weiter. Hama'ala es ha'ofim ha'gvina ala shochan. I will say, if a person goes ahead and brings up chicken together with cheese on his table, eino over below sasa. Ultimately, again, there is no losasa, right? There is no prohibition associated with that. So the Gemara says, okay, that's interesting. Ha ochlo over below sasa. What I could infer from that is there may be no problem with putting them on the table together, but I could infer from that there is a problem with eating them together, and I'm in violation of a lo sase. Which lo sase, Rabbi Osai? Presumably, basar b'chalav, shmamina basar of b'chalav daraisa. What do you see from here? That the prohibition of chicken, fowl, and milk is daraisa, to which the Gemara says, no. Ema hama'ala asa of magvina ala shulchan, eino ba lidei lo sase. Rather, the way you have to read the Mishnah is as follows. We'll say, why is it? Let's go back for just a moment. Remember, we learned you can't eat milk and flesh. You can't eat meat and milk at the same table. Very important halacha. You can't eat milk and meat. Why not? There's nothing wrong with going ahead and having milk and meat at the same table. What are we concerned about? That you'll come to eat it together. Right? So I will say, so there again, I'm making exer, and remember again, even though the Gemara said, even if you meet them, eat them together, tzonin b'tzonin, it's called, but again, you could have situations where it could lead to mamish basar b'chalav. So therefore, again, there's exer d'rabbanon that you can't go ahead and bring milk and meat up on the same table, lest you come to go ahead and violate an issur d'oraisa. But that issur d'rabbanon, that protective gzera is there to shield you from violating an issur d'oraisa. What the Gemara is simply suggesting over here is you could eat chicken and milk at the same table. You could put them at the same table. Why? Because I will say, even if you were to chas v'shalom, I say chas v'shalom, eat them together, it would not be an issur d'oraisa. Because there's not an issur d'oraisa, therefore there's no need for the rabbinic protective fence. Good. So everybody say, aloha l'maisa, a person could have chicken. And again, obviously, we don't do this. We do not do this. Right? Correct. Good. Right, no chicken parmesan. No, that's right. We don't do this. Meaning, even though, again, technically speaking, one may be able to do it, but halacha l'maaseh, we know we don't do this for a very simple reason. Very simple reason. Essentially, we treat chicken like meat. We're going to get into this more, but we don't really make this distinction. I'll tell you where we do make this distinction between chicken and meat. In situations of a chola, in situations, right, sometimes a person needs to have both types of food items within a closer proximity to each other. So we could be mako sometimes with the amount of time that you have to wait between chicken and milk if a person has a compromised situation. Young children who are being mechanich them in waiting, so there's a need to wait there. Between meat and milk, again, sometimes be a little bit more mako with chicken and milk. But again, in general, halacha l'maisa, we go ahead and we treat fowl just like basar. Good. But let's say now we get into an incredible Mishnah. I mean, they've all been incredible. But let's say now we get a little bit more like into the interesting of like the basar b'chalav 101. Basar behema tahora, b'chalav behema tahora, asr levashal v'asr bana. So we'll say meat of a kosher animal and milk of a kosher animal. But let's say that is basar b'chalav mid'araisa. Therefore, you cannot cook it. You cannot get benefit from that. Well, so obviously included in benefit is what? Is achila, is eating it. So you can't eat it, you can't cook it, you can't get hanah from it. However, basar behemah tahor, if you have kosher meat, bechalav behemah tameah, in non-kosher milk, or basar behemah tameah, bechalav behemah tahora, or I will say, for that matter, again, non-kosher meat with kosher milk, so ultimately, again, mutra levashal or mutra banah. You're permitted to cook this, you're permitted to get benefit from it. Obviously, you can't eat it because it's not kosher, but it's not basar b'chalav. We'll say this is perhaps one of the most incredible halachos when it comes to basar b'chalav, which is basar b'chalav is only created through kosher meat and kosher milk. Which we'll say is so funny. I mean, it's not funny, but you know, it's interesting because sometimes, like the paradigmatic example you have of basar b'chalav is what? Is a cheeseburger. So we'll say, so what's interesting, and even the truth is, that's not even a good example for a different reason, because you're not even really being actively cooked together. But I will say, but for example, if you were to take a non-kosher hamburger and a non-kosher piece of cheese or a kosher, that's basar b'chalav, but interestingly enough, it's basar b'chalav midrabanan. Now, it's nevela d'oraisa, so don't get excited. You are still violating a biblical prohibition, just a different one. So right, if I have non-kosher meat with kosher milk, that's nevela. That's trefa, it's just not basar b'chalav. Basar b'chalav is only created through the act of cooking kosher meat and kosher milk together. Anything else will be asr alts the halachas of tarifus. It's not kosher, but it's not technical basar b'chalav. We'll say, now remember, that's a major nafkamina. What's the major, why is it a major nafkamina? Because we'll say basar b'chalav is asr ba'na. Other forms of non-kosher food are not asr ba'na. So if I have non-kosher meat, I could give that to my Gentile neighbor. I could sell it to someone. Basar b'chalav is mamish off limits. So again, so therefore, only basar b'chalav on a technical level if it's kosher meat and kosher milk. Rabbi Kiva says, chaya v'of inam in haTorah. Rabbi Kiva says furthermore, chaya, we'll say, which is non-domesticated animal, of, which is fowl, are not asr b'da'oraisa for basar b'chalav. Shne'emar, lo siva shel gedi b'chaliv imo gimo pamim. Because we'll say the pasuk says, you shall not cook a kid, right, gedi, in its mother's milk three times. Why three times? Prat l'chaya, ula of, ula behema t'meya. So we'll say in Rabbi Akiva's model, each of those gedis are coming to exclude something. One gedi is coming to exclude chaya, One Gedi is coming to exclude Oaf, and one Gedi is coming to exclude non-kosher animals. Rabbi Yosef Lili Omer, Ne'emar lo sochlu kol nevela, v'ne'emar lo siva shal gedi b'chalev imo. Rabbi Yosef says you can't eat a nevela, right? And it also says you can't cook a kid in its mother's milk. Es sha'asr mishum nevela, asr levashal b'chalev. Anything Rabbi Yosef says that is asr alts nevela, meaning say any animal which can become a nevela and never become asr, will be chayiv for basr b'chalev if you cook it with milk. Oaf sha'asr mishum nevela, yachol yehi asr levashal b'chalev. So therefore, again, when it comes to a bird, let's remember again, a bird can become asr. If you eat a bird carcass, a bird dies, right? A bird dies, and you eat that bird carcass, that's nevela. So I would have thought, therefore, that a bird is subject to basr b'chalev as well, to which the Gemara is amazing. Tamar lomar b'chalev imo. Therefore, the pasuk says, in its mother's milk, yatsa oaf she'in lo chalevim. This comes to exclude a mother, which what? Has no, excuse me, I'm sorry, this comes to exclude a bird whose mother does not produce milk. So as I say, interestingly enough, Rabbi Akiva is, Rabbi Yosef Lili, is agreeing with Rabbi Akiva, at least in Oaf, right, and agreeing that Oaf Bechalav cannot become Asr Medaraisa, because ultimately, again, it does not satisfy the criteria of Chalev Imo, but he's arguing, as we're going to see, on Chaya and on Behemoth Tameah. Good. Menahani Mili. So we'll say, let's analyze the Gemara. So how do we know? So what the Gemara is asking over here, we'll say, is as follows. The Pasuk says, Lo siva shel gedi b'chalev imo. Right? So gedi, right? Kid, a young sheep. So, right? Chagadya, right? So how do I know that basr b'chalev applies to other animals? In other words, how do I know that it's just not gedi? So we'll say, watch this. Amar b'loz Amar Kra is amazing. Vayishlach Yehuda es gedi ha'izim. So we'll say, so the Pasuk says, remember again, this is after Yehuda has the rendezvous with Tamar, doesn't know it's Tamar, and wants to pay her afterwards. So what does he send her? Amongst other things, he sends her a gedi ha'izim, right? A young goat. So we'll say, Amud Beis. So the Gemara says, Kan gedi ha'izim, ha'kol makom shenemar gedi stam, va'afilu para v'rachal b'mashma. So we'll say, so this is really quite amazing. So here, interestingly enough, what the Gemara is picking up on is, it calls it over here gedi ha'izim. Gedi izin. So the fact that it qualifies gedi izin tells me that here, because it's qualified, it refers to a specific type of animal. But wherever else you find the word gedi, that's even stam. That refers to all animals. Afilu para biracha b'mashma. Even a cow, even a sheep is included in that. I b'leilif mine. But I don't understand. Why don't they say just the opposite? Why don't they learn from gedi izin? That's what? That gedi actually just means gedi izim and nothing else. I'll tell you why. Because sivkra achrino. Because we'll say there's another pasuk. Ve'es oros gedi izim. We'll say this is by Yaakov Avinu when he goes in and he dresses up as Esav. So the pasuk says that his mother gave him the skins of the gedi izim. Kan gedi izim. So we'll say, what do you see from here? You see from here over here that halacha l'maisa, it's qualified as gedi izim. When the Torah wants to refer to a particular, to a goat, it calls it gedi izim, which tells us that what? That anywhere else where it just says gedi, what's the halacha? It's any kind of animal. Any kind of animal. Hakom wakom gedi stam, afilu para v'racha v'mashma. The fact that the Torah has to qualify gedi izim tells me that unqualified gedi izim, i.e. just gedi, refers to any type of animal. So the Gemara says, v'leilof minei, salon stem, why don't you learn that over here from Yaakov Avinu? That halacha l'maisa gedi izim means gedi izim, to which the Gemara says havulu shnei ksuva b'ayin ke'echad. Because we'll say, remember again, I have now two psukim. I now have two psukim. Ultimately, again, that are teaching me the same exact thing. Shnei ksuva b'ayin ke'echad, and it says the Gemara shnei ksuva b'ayin ke'echad ein melandin. So I'll say, so remember again, we've had this principle many times throughout Shas, which is that whenever you have two psukim, see, I would say, if the Torah teaches you something once, then what? I could say that one teaching is to create what? Is to create a paradigm, right? Or to create a principle, a framework. When you have a concept mentioned twice, that means the Torah is actually telling me that what? The principle mentioned, the articulated principle, dafka applies in the situations where it is mentioned, but cannot be learned out to apply to other circumstances. That's Shnei Ksuvin, Habayin Ke'echad Ein Melamdin. To which Rabbah says, now what do I have? I have something very interesting over here. I have two times that the Torah says, Gedi Izin. The fact the Torah says, Gedi Izin tells me that when it says Gedi Izin, that means what? Dafka Gedi Izin. Which I can learn out from there to mean that what? That Halacha L'maisa, when it says just Stam Gedi means any type of animal. So the Gemara says, Hani Chalman Damar Eim Alamdin. That's fine according to the opinion that says that if a Pasuk states something twice, you cannot learn a principle from it. But according to the opinion who says that even if the Torah says something twice, halacha lemaisa, you could still learn out a principle from it. What is there to say? To which the Gemara says, tre meute ksibi. Ultimately, the Gemara says, by both times, there are two limiting, two meutim that are written. The Gemara says, ksiv izim ha'izim. If you look at Rashi, was for just a moment, it's the last of the wide lines on top. There is a hey mentioned in each of those psukim, which is a miut, a limiting factor, to teach us that it's tafka in these circumstances that gedi means gedi izim, but otherwise, when you find the word gedi refers to any animal in general. So we'll say, so that is piece. So therefore, again, piece number one that the Gemara has established is that even though the Torah phrases it as lo sivashel gedi bechalivimo, gedi does not just have to mean a particular type of animal like gedi izim, because when the Torah wants to tell you gedi izim, what does it do? What does it do? It says gedi izim. If it doesn't say that, then halacha l'maisa, again, it refers to any type of animal. Good. Amar Shmuel. Gedi l'rabos es ha-chelev. Gedi l'rabos es ha-meso. Gedi l'rabos es ha-shalil. So what's it? Listen to this. So Shmuel says, when the Torah says gedi, balos v'ashal gedi b'chalivimo, it's coming to include a variety of things. Number one, it's coming to tell me, chelev. Bosei chelev is the forbidden fat of the animal. That if you go ahead and you cook the forbidden fat, the chelev, with chalav, that ultimately, again, you'll be chayiv for basar b'chalav. We'll say, of course, now the novelty in this is what? The chelev is already asur. Right? The chelev is already asur. Yet, if you take that same chelev and you cook it together with milk, you'll be chayiv out basar b'chalav. So again, we'll discuss that in just a little bit. Gedi, the rabbi says hamesa. If an animal died, rabbi will say, if an animal died and you cook it with milk, ultimately, again, you are chayiv for basar b'chalav. The novelty in that is what? Again, the meat is already asur. Als what? Als the vela. Next, gedi l'rabo says ha-shalil. Gedi l'rabo says comes to include a fetus. That if you go ahead and you take a fetus from an animal and you cook that in milk, ultimately, again, that is basar b'chalav. Gedi l'hotzi es adam. Now, rabo says, not only does gedi include things, gedi also excludes things. So, for example, gedi excludes blood. Excludes blood. Salach l'maisa, again, if you go ahead and you cook blood and milk, that's not basar b'chalav. Gedi loti es hashalya. So we'll say gedi ultimately excludes the placenta. If you take the placenta of the animal, cook it in milk, there is no basar b'chalav. Gedi loti es hatmeya. And gedi teaches us that if you take non-kosher meat and cook it in milk, you are not chayev for basar b'chalav. So the Gemara says, let's analyze this. B'chalav imo. Furthermore, the pasuk says in its mother's milk, what does this come to exclude? V'lo b'chalav zocher. Ultimately, I will say, for some reason, if you were to have a male animal that would have a little bit of milk, ultimately, again, halacha l'maisa, that milk, and you were to cook meat in that milk that you got from a male animal, that would not create a basar b'chalav situation. B'chalav imo, v'lo b'chalav shchuta. I will say, furthermore, it's actually very interesting. You only chayav for basar b'chalav where? If the milk comes from a living mother. If the mother was shechted, and halacha l'maisa, again, milk is extracted from the mother after. That's from the udders, right? We spend a lot of time on udders. Halacha l'maisa, that does not create basar b'chalav. B'chalav imo, v'lo b'chalav t'meya. Furthermore, again, it's only the mother's milk and not the milk from a non-kosher animal. So the Gemara says, one second. Hot lasa gedik sivi. So the Gemara says, Shmuel, you got to come down here a little bit, because the truth is, the word gedi is mentioned three times. And you just learned six things from three words, right? Three things to be included, three things to be excluded. V'anan shisa darshinan karsav Shmuel. So we'll say in reality, Shmuel holds iser chalal iser. V'iser chelev. So in reality, Shmuel holds, and this is kind of obvious, that Isra Chalal Isra. That remember again, even if something is already Asr, another state of Isra can devolve upon that already pre-existing state of Isra. That's why Shmuel said that Halacha L'maisa, if you have Chalev, right, which is already Asr, but you cook the Chalev in milk, ultimately again it's Basr B'chalev, which means it's Asr Chalev, right, Nevela, not Nevela, what was the other case, I'm sorry. I'm going to have some mesa, right? If the animal's dead, it's already nevela. You cook it with chalav, you are going to be chay bas b'chalav. So Shmuel clearly holds iser chalav iser. So therefore, again, the iser chalav u'mesa mechad kranafk. In reality, again, you can learn out the isurim of chalav and nevela and the dead animal from one pasuk, nafki dam. So the Gemara says mechad kranafki. Excuse me, dam nami lav gedihu. Ultimately, again, blood doesn't really need a separate limud. Why not? Because obviously there's no prohibition of basar b'chalav with blood and milk. Why? Because blood is not basar. L'shalya nami pir sheba amahu. And ultimately, again, the placenta is really just, is you know, pir sheba amahu means it's just something discarded. So therefore, basar, what the Gemara is essentially saying is, Shmuel made a whole list, and he made it look like he's learning out all of these things from the psukim, but in reality, he's only learning out some of them from the psukim. Many of them are just quite intuitive. So the Gemara says, "Ha pashaluhu trei." That leaves me two gediz, and what do I learn from there? Chad l'rabo says hashalil. One is to include the fetus in the prohibition of asur b'chalav. V'chad l'me'utei behema tameya. And one is to exclude behema tameya from the isra basur b'chalav. So the Gemara says, "V'savar Shmuel isra chalal iser." Is that really true that Shmuel holds that one Isra can devolve upon another Isra? See, Rabbi say, remember again, Shmuel has to hold that way, because if he doesn't hold that way, then how can you ever have Chalev become Asr Alz Basr B'Chalev, right? Chalev is already Asr, yet Shmuel says if you cook Chalev in Chalev, you are going to be Chayev for Basr B'Chalev. Does Shmuel really hold Isra Chalal Isra? After all, the Hamar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Elazar. Minayin L'Koin Tamei She'achot Shuma Tameya She'elam Amisa. How do I know that if I have a kohen who is already tamei, who ate truma, which is already tamei, shenu amisa, that he's not put to the throne? We'll say, under normal circumstances, if a kohen who is tamei eats truma, he's chayiv misa. What Shmuel is saying over here is that if I have a kohen who's tamei, who eats truma, which is tamei, it's aser, but there's not a chayiv misa. Where do I know that from? Shene emar, umesu bo ki yechalaluhu. They will die because they have profaned it. They have profaned the truma. Prat luzu shemichuleles v'omeles. This comes to exclude this truma, which what? Was already tamei. So the Gemara says, ibay seima. So which we're supposed to say, so again, so what do you see from here? So therefore again, the Gemara is suggesting that based on this, if you take a look, so, well, let's see the Gemara. Ibay seima. So therefore, how do we reconcile this? It appears that ultimately, again, Shmuel does not hold of Isra Chalal Isra, right, in this particular case of Truma, yet before you said that he does hold of Isra Chalal Isra, so which one is it? To which the Gemara says, Iba Yisema, Bi'ama Isra Chalal Isra. In reality, Shmuel normally holds that Isra is Chalal Isra. B'shayni Hasam, and I'll say this case of Truma is different, why? D'miyet Rachmano Umesu Bo. Because I'll say the Pasuk, it's a limiting phrase. The Pasuk says, and they will die because of this. Limiting the Chiyav Misa to a very specific context of what? Of a Tamei Kohen who eats Tahor Truma. Therefore, if you are a Tamei Kohen who eats Tamei Truma, again, the Pasuk limits you. This is not a case of Isra Chalal Isra. This is really what we call like a Gzeres HaKasuf, to which the Gemara says, Iba Yisema, B'yama Kasav Shmuel in Isra Chalal Isra, or another possibility, really Shmuel doesn't hold of Isra Chalal Isra, V'shayni Hacha, and I'll say it's different over here, by Basar B'Chalav, that even if you take Chalev and cook it with milk, that it will become Asr Alz Basar B'Chalav. We'll say first wide line, Kof Yud Gimel, the Rabbi Rachmana Gidi, because what the Torah uses an all-encompassing Lashon of Gidi. And ever because the Torah uses a broader Lashon of Gidi, that comes to even include Chalev. V'bay Seim, another possibility is, Hadidei Had Rabbe. So this is probably the easiest answer out of all of them. Shmuel is quoting two different opinions, right? There's the opinion of himself, and there's the opinion, ultimately, again, of his Rebbe. That one of them held Isser Chalal Isser, one of them held Ein Isser Chalal Isser, and therefore, again, you could have two different rulings in two different cases, and they're not contradictory. Listen to this. But say, what happens if you cook meat in milk, but the milk came from an animal that never nursed its young. So we'll say, so the nerves, the animals, Rashi points out, the animals towards the latter stages of pregnancy, where it already is developing milk, but ultimately, again, has never actively nursed. So we'll say, so what's the status of that mixture? Well, this is actually a very interesting question. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Shalohi Nika, it's five lines up from the bottom. Lo yoldo meyoldom, v'yesh lo chalav, kishi krova li melei dasa, mi daikinan imo, shai si imo kvar olo. So we'll say, what the Gemara is asking over here is, how literal do I have to be in the pasuk? The pasuk says, lo seva shal gedi b'chalev imo, and it's mother's milk. To be a, right, to be a mother, so to be a technical mother, then what? The mother has birthed its young and nursed it. So does the milk, dafka, have to come to an animal, from an animal that has already nursed its young or not? To which the Gemara says, the fact that Shmuel, the Darshan before, that's what? It's dafka, mother's milk, and not milk that comes from a male animal. Zachar hu dela asi lechlalim. It's dafka, milk from a male animal, which can never become a mother. Ultimately, again, that does not create basa b'chalav. Aval hai, kevan dibalich lal'im aser. But this female animal, since she can become a mother, ultimately, again, even if she has never yet nursed, her milk can create basa b'chalav. Itmar, hamavashal chelev b'chalav. We'll say, what happens if you go ahead and you cook chelev in milk? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Amir, Rabbi Yasi, chad amar loke. One opinion says you get malchus, one opinion says you don't get malchus. So what are they arguing about? So the Gemara says very simple. Maybe the machlokis is as follows. And again, not complicated. What's the machlokis? Do we say isr chal al isr or not? The chilev is already usr. You now go ahead and cook it in milk. Can another layer of isra basar b'chalav devolve upon the already usr chilev or not? One opinion says yes. One opinion says no. So what says the Gemara lo? The chuli alma ain isr chal al isr. No, everyone agrees that ain isr chal al isr. So what says? So what's the issue over here? Achila, actually, we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up Emirat Hashem with the resolution of this machlokes. Sha'atova, we'll get tomorrow.